Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, December 17th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, you shoveled enough? Yeah, me too. A lot of us have some aches and pains from shoveling all the massive amounts of snow that we shoveled this morning and today. So back by popular demand is physical therapist Matthew Goodemote of Goodemote Physical Therapy. So if you got the aching shoulder, as I do, or the aching knee, as I do, or the aching elbow, as I do, or the aching wrist, as I do, you name it, it aches. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also reach out via email, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Physical therapy and Matthew Goodemote coming up after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today is physical therapist Matthew Goodemote. Matthew is one of just 350 spine specialists that holds his diploma from the Mackenzie Spine Institute International. What's that? Well, we'll find out. He and his staff at Goodemote Physical Therapy provide a whole-body approach to therapy by offering a blend of exercise-based therapy and manual therapy. Goodemote Physical Therapy offers small group strength training classes for osteoporosis, fall prevention, and athletic performance, and their programs are designed to prevent injury and improve performance in sports and recreation. If you got a question that a physical therapist can answer, give us a call. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Matthew Goodemote, how are you?
I'm well, Ray. How are you?
Let me ask you a question. You're a person who knows the mechanics of the body and how to do things correctly. Do you have any aches and pains from shoveling today?
Yes.
Yes?
I have sore hands, partly because I do manual therapy, but holding the snowblower for the last 4 hours is really uncomfortable. So yeah. My hands are really stiff and sore.
Well, of course, you're lucky you got a snowblower. And some people shoveled a lot of snow today. And I got to, as I was digging my car out for the second time from a snowbank today, I got to thinking about, what is it most people do wrong when they hurt themselves shoveling?
Most people, it's improper technique with their spine, so they will round their lower back instead of, I have a little slogan, when in doubt, stick your butt out. Ah. So if you have your butt sticking out, your back tends to stay more straight, which is protective of the spine. And the other one is they just keep shoveling to the same side. So instead of switching hands and using both arms to throw the snow, they tend to, stand with their left arm forward, for example, or their right arm forward. And so then they just overuse that particular shoulder joint, and it gets pretty cranky.
And you say cranky, but there's really nothing that time won't heal there, right?
Not necessarily, because especially for older people, the rotator cuff muscles are notorious for fraying as time goes on. It's kind of like if you took a rope and rubbed it over a rock, eventually the rope would start to fray. Well, our rotator cuff muscles in the shoulder are similar in that regard. So they'll start to fray. And then if you go out and do an extra amount of shoveling, or if it's a heavy wet snow, that's where people tend to really injure themselves and actually can tear their rotator cuff. Mm. And I have treated patients who've injured their spine. Similarly, the lumbar spine, the discs in the back, they're resilient when you have a straight spine. But if you flex a lot, bend forward a lot, and especially repeating with lifting, like the snow, then I've had people who've injured their disc doing that and herniated and, had nerve pain and or nerve problems afterwards.
Our number to call here is 800-348-2551. Matthew Goodemote is our guest. Now, you have mentioned this before and you have described this for us on some of your past appearances. But for those who have never heard you, what is the Mackenzie Spine Institute International?
So Robin Mackenzie was this physical therapist from New Zealand. And back in the 1950s, he had this patient with sciatica, which is pain, nerve pain going down the back of the leg. And in the 1950s, people would treat that with massage and heat and also bed rest for way too long. So Mackenzie had this patient that came in, and the prior patient had an ankle sprain. So the treatment table had been elevated on one end to help for elevation of the ankle sprain. So when Mr. Smith went into the treatment room, he lay down on the table, even though half of it was in the air, and it caused him to bend backwards. And in the 1950s, they thought that was bad for your spine.
Why?
It turns out it's not.
Why did they think it was bad?
It was based on a couple things. One idea was that we didn't have the technology to show how much the nerves are innervating the discs. And now we know that as we get older, the nerves will actually penetrate into the disc based on the disc breaking down. But in the 50s, if you did a dissection, you wouldn't see a lot of nerves, especially in a healthy disc, going into the disc itself. So it was only the outer portion of it. And when you bent backwards, you could see how the vertebrae would come together. So they just made some assumptions that were incorrect, that that would be harmful for you. But in the end, the patient got off the table and the sciatica was gone. And so to me, the genius of Mackenzie was two things. One is that he went against the trend, meaning that he based it on the patient's response. So the patient got better, therefore continue doing that treatment. And the other thing I thought was a genius about him was that he tested people. So anybody who came in with back pain, he would check them and see how they responded to this bending backwards type movement. And it turns out it's not for everybody, but certain patterns develop. And based on those patterns, and I can tell patients, you know, do this specific movement and your back will feel better from it. And oftentimes the patient that I see they do the shotgun approach where they try five different stretches because they went online and they found a website that said these are the five exercises you should do for a healthy spine. But that's a very generic approach, of course, and everyone's unique. And so there's usually one or two movements that are going to give you the most relief. And so my practice, that's what I focus on, is get the relief. Once somebody's out of the woods and they're feeling better, then I would agree with those websites that say do these general exercises, because then you're not in agony, so you're just trying to keep your back healthy.
Matthew Goodemoto is our guest. It's physical therapy today on Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551 if you have a question, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And Matt, this one came in from Paul, subject heading, tennis elbow.
Yes.
Paul writes, I've had physical therapy in the past for very bad neck injury with a very good physical therapist who retired. I've been okay for the past 2 years with occasional flare-ups, but during summer, my elbow hurt and forearm. Slept with towel under shoulder, which helped upper arm, but elbow still hurts and hand is occasionally weak to grip. Do I have tennis elbow? I did play in the summer, but seems neck-related too. What exercises? I do basic yoga in the morning. I have a band, but haven't used it lately. And that is from Paul in Ulster County.
So tennis elbow, there's a misnomer about it. It is often with tennis players that they develop it, but it's the medical definition of it is lateral epicondylitis. So the lateral is the outer part of the arm, and the epicondyle is a bone in your elbow where the tendon attaches to. So a tennis elbow is a tendonitis of that tendon where it comes in. And it doesn't have to be just tennis. It can be from a multitude of things. People working on computers, for example, and using a mouse or the keyboard can develop it as well. So his question about is it the neck was one of the very first things I thought as well, because oftentimes it's confused with tennis elbow because the nerve runs nearby. So the first thing to do is to clear the neck for sure. And a simple way to do that is you hold your arm still, especially when it's hurting, and move the neck around. And if it changes how that arm feels, the elbow down to the hand, then I would say that something is at least connected to the neck there, because obviously you're not moving the elbow. But if once the neck has been cleared, then this is an important thing to know, because, again, as time has gone on, we've learned new things. And in the past, when I first got out of physical therapy school 25 years ago, they recommended you do a lot of stretching for the tendon. And you know how I feel about stretching, Ray.
Yes.
So I don't recommend stretching for a lot of reasons, but specifically with tendons, we now know with quite a bit of certainty that strengthening is how you improve tendons. And so in the beginning, you start off with isometrics, which is where you don't move, you just tense up the muscle and hold it. And then you progress that through a series of different type of strengthening, getting into eccentrics, which are the negatives for weightlifters, and then into concentric, which is pushing and pulling type movements. And then the final one is dynamic, where you're throwing a ball or back to playing tennis. And we know that if you go through those stages and each time you continue to progress through them, then you tend to have better outcomes, certainly better than just trying to stretch, and definitely better than trying to ignore it and hope it goes away.
Matthew Goodemoat is our guest. It's Vox Pop, and we'll do physical therapy for the next 40 minutes on this program. If you have a question, 800-348-2551. I should rephrase that. We're not actually doing physical therapy. We're discussing physical therapy, and we'll do that for the next 40 minutes. Give us a call. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. And the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Physical therapist Matthew Goodemoat joins us. Glenn writes in, "Hey now, I have a tip. I put a rake handle on my snow shovel, so it's now 5 feet long." I don't know. You think that's a good idea?
It's definitely not a good idea for everyone. The longer the lever, the more force is generated. If it's pushing, you're just pushing because the snow is pretty light and you're just kind of pushing it along. I think that would be definitely okay. But to lift with that, I'm not sure.
Okay.
I've never heard of that before.
No, nor have I. This one is from Paula in Beacon, and then we'll hit the phones. Paula writes, "When I was at work in an office, I used to get up to go to a meeting, walk from one conference room to another, walk around the block to get lunch. Now I'm home with everything close by, and my back is killing me. When I remember, I'll get up and walk up and down my flight of stairs or stretch a little bit. I probably need a better chair to work in, but in the meantime, how often should I get up from my chair now that I'm working from home?" And that's from Paula in Beacon.
Well, this one is a very well-studied topic, and the last I had read about this, we have a tolerance for sitting for about 30 to 45 minutes.
Huh.
And so if I had my way and it was an ideal scenario, then I would have her set an alarm for right around 30 to 45 minutes and to stand up and change positions. Often what happens when we sit is we adjust, we move around a little bit, but then we go right back into a slouched kind of posture. So
wow.
The best case scenario would be to have a standing desk that you go to and stand for a couple, like 30 minutes, and then you go and sit down for 30 minutes and you keep going back and forth from sitting to standing. We know from research, again, back in the 1980s, that prolonged standing isn't the best thing in the world. It's certainly not great for circulation and it causes problems in the lower legs, but also for the spine. Basically, the spine doesn't like prolonged position. So the longer you sit, the longer you stand, the more cranky your back is going to get.
Ah, but you didn't mention prolonged lying on the couch, which is one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah. No, that's good for you.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's go to Gail in Oneonta. Gail, you're on.
Yes, I was wondering, is it safe to put TENS unit leads on the back of the neck?
Good question. So TENS is electrostimulation, and there are these things in our neck called baroreceptors that help to control our blood pressure, but they're more towards the front where our big arteries and veins are, and you absolutely want to stay away from them. That would definitely be the case. But if you're talking just in the very back of the spine, right where the bumps of the bones are, and just off to the side, there's muscles there, that would be okay definitely to put the pads there. But I would avoid anything towards the collarbone, for example, or under the chin. I wouldn't recommend that at all.
Thank you. I have another question. I had a special test done, and I was wondering, and it was an electrical thing, and I was wondering if the TENS unit would have a tendency to affect something else, you know, a test.
Right. Only if it was being used at the same time. So the test you probably had done was a nerve conduction test, and it's a different...
No, it was pressure.
Oh.
It was studying the muscles on my esophagus.
Ah.
Oh. Yeah. No, I don't think the TENS has a negative effect in that regard. I've never heard of that and I've never read about that, so I wouldn't think it would have any kind of effect like that. It's not one of our listed contraindications or precautions, for example.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gail. We appreciate it. Matthew Goodemote is our guest today. Physical therapy is the topic here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. Chris is in Housatonic. Chris.
Hey, Matthew and Ray. I got a question for you both. I'd be, like, sleeping or sitting watching TV, and all of a sudden, it's excruciating pain, Matthew and Ray. I'd be sitting, and my calf would just, like, out of the blue, tighten up.
Oh.
And, I'd get up and stretch it out, but it's excruciating pain.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't know what the cause of that is, Matthew.
All right, Chris, while Matthew's answering this, could you turn your radio down just a little bit, buddy?
Okay.
All right, go ahead, Matt.
So there's a couple things. If there's an actual tension of the muscles, like a muscle cramp, oftentimes you have to look into things nutritionally to make sure you have the right vitamins and minerals and make sure you're hydrated properly, because all those things can cause cramping of the muscles. There are other indications too, vascular-wise, especially been prolonged sitting. It depends on if you have something, for example, pressing under the back of the knee, reducing the blood flow that could cause things calf cramping, for example. And the other one that comes to mind is there are some people that will get a symptom from the spine because the nerve will travel right down through the back of the leg. And sometimes it's because of the prolonged sitting that the back's alarm system is trying to get you up and move around. Based on what he says, it sounds more like a muscle type of cramp than the nerve. But I would just make sure it's kind of like my order of priorities would be the first, second, and third. The spine would be the third. But I wouldn't totally rule it out until I was sure it was coming from something else.
Chris, thanks a lot for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Physical therapy with Matthew Goodemote today. And Randy in Charlemont, you're on.
Hi. I got a question. I had my knee replaced. And before the surgery, I didn't have great range of motion, but now I have, like, really bad range of motion, and then I do squatting and bending on the stairs, trying to get it back, and I'll get some range of motion, and then I'll lose it right away almost. I'm just wondering what I can do about that.
How long ago was your knee replacement?
It's been a year and a month now.
Oh, wow. So that long out, it becomes more and more difficult to get your range of motion. So one of the things I always like to talk about is the swelling of the knee. So if you have any swelling, that would be my number one starting point for you to reduce and or eliminate the swelling, because the swelling will absolutely impair your ability to bend the knee. But the other part would be that
swelling way back, but not so much now.
Not so much now. Yeah, after a year, a lot of scar tissue has taken place, most likely, and there's been a restriction in the tissue. So you can still regain movement, but it's a lot harder the longer this goes on. So a couple things. If you've not already talked to your orthopedic about that, that would be something definitely to mention. So even to set up an appointment to show them the motion, the surgeon that did it. But beyond
I've done that.
Yeah. Okay. So for exercise, what you're doing when you say you can gain some range of motion, what happens when we do this is we get about a 3-hour window is kind of a maximum before the tissue returns back to its kind of original shape. So in order to get more range of motion, you have to do your exercises more frequently. Frequently to me would be like literally every hour, so that you don't ever take dirt when you're awake. Of course, don't wake up in the middle of the night to do this. But when you're awake, just start off first thing, get as much motion as you can. And every hour, to the point of setting an alarm, do it again and try to get as much range of motion, like, and maintain it throughout the whole day. In the clinic here, we would work on your leg. I was about to say we're going to beat the heck out of your leg.
Nice.
I don't want to scare people away. So we would work on the muscles for sure and do a lot of soft tissue work to try to help facilitate some range of motion. And there's some things we can do with the joint itself and teach you some sustained positions. So it sounds like you would be one of those examples of exceptions to my rule where I don't like to stretch. When it's a year out, I would have you stretching for prolonged periods of time and get you in a position, for example, where you're laying on your back with your foot up on the wall and putting a towel under your foot and sliding it down as far as you can, and then using like a little ankle weight to help nudge it down deeper.
and literally stay in that kind of position for up to 5 minutes. And then there's a whole bunch, like I have all these ideas of different ways to do it. But the bigger point here is that if you had the joint range of motion according to the surgeon, then the soft tissue is partly what's restricting you and obviously some discomfort. So those are the type of things that you can work on in therapy. We can reduce pain and improve mobility. And it, I would stress this, though, the longer this goes out from your surgery date, the harder it is to do. It's not impossible, but it does become an uphill battle for sure.
Randy, thanks a lot for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Physical therapy today with Matthew Goodemote. And Susan is in Lenox. Hello, Susan.
Hello. Good to talk to you.
Hi.
I've had pain for about the last month in my hip, and I saw an orthopedic doctor who thought that it was trochanteric bursitis, and he made that diagnosis with x-rays.
Okay.
He sent me to physical therapy, and I've only had an evaluation so far. The physical therapist, he also gave me a cortisone shot, which did not work.
Yeah.
So the physical therapist thought that it was not the bursitis, but the pain was coming from a pinched nerve from a disc.
Yeah.
Well, I've had two very different diagnoses, and I don't know which is accurate, and I want the treatment based on
the most accurate diagnosis.
Yeah.
Yep. So an X-ray can't diagnose a hip bursitis. Just I shouldn't say that. There, it would have to be a very inflamed bursitis. So typically, when you get an X-ray, it's to rule out fractures and to look at the joint and see if there's arthritis going on there. And the bursitis for me is very easy to diagnose because you push on a very specific spot and it hurts. For example, if you have any pain in your buttock, if you have any pain in your buttock at all, that's not a typical bursitis. And if it's not like a pinpoint specific area, then I also would start to look at the spine and at very least to eliminate it. Because like you said, if you're treating the wrong thing, then you're not going to make any substantial gains. Now, the good news for you is that there's very similar and there's some crossover treatments. So when you're doing exercises for the spine, oftentimes you want to do strengthening to help strengthen the buttock muscles and the core muscles is what we would call it. And you would do that for a bursitis as well. And so there's ways a physical therapist can diagnose it through palpation, for example, and then through a series of movements and testing, because a bursitis is typically going to hurt when you lie on it, for example, and it's going to hurt when you walk. It wouldn't hurt when you are sitting still. It would be very unusual for it to be like that. It would be rare for it to hurt just standing still, whereas the spine would often hurt when you're sitting, and the spine would often hurt when you're standing still. So there's characteristics of these diagnoses that you can get more and more specific with it. And the last thing I'll say is typically, if you do have a really irritated bursitis, then a cortisone usually has at least a positive effect. It may not abolish it, but you usually can feel a substantial reduction in symptoms because by definition, a bursitis means an inflammation of the bursa, and a cortisone shot to that should improve it, and most times does if it's a true bursitis.
Susan, thanks a lot for the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. The number is 800-348-2551. Physical therapy with Matthew Goodemote today. And D is in Beacon. Hello, D.
Yeah, hi, Matthew. Thank you so much. I love your show. It's incredible.
Thanks.
I just had a question about my front shoulder. The area closer to the neck, about 10 years ago, I had a capsule release surgery, and it healed, and the pain wasn't there. But in the last 3-4 years now, the pain has been in the front area, and my question is that every 6 months I get a cortisone shot, and it's like a Band-Aid, and it helps out, but it's less and less effective. And I want to know if it's bad to get these cortisone shots. I mean, does it cause cancer? I heard all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. So the cancer part, I've never heard that. So I would have to look into it to be accurate. But when you ask, is it good for you? And to go every 6 months, I would have a hard no. that wouldn't make any sense to me to keep doing that. And we know more and more about cortisone and how it can have a negative effect on the health of the tendon and the health of the cartilage. So it's not that you shouldn't ever have a cortisone shot, but to have it literally every 6 months, I would really challenge that approach. And the other thing is that often what an orthopedic would do would be recommending physical therapy, because you can do quite a bit of strengthening type of exercises to maintain the health of the shoulder joint. And if you're not doing regular exercises for it, it could be why it's returning. And again, if they're injecting into an area, my brain can't find a reason why you would be doing every 6 months, because it's a very aggressive approach with cortisone, and the outcome would be similar to what you're describing, that it gets less and less effective. And it certainly should have somewhere in there some type of exercises for your rotator cuff and also the shoulder blade muscles to help support the shoulder joint and obviously to reduce how often you get the injections.
I see. Just one other question. The thing is there any apps on the internet or anything that I can search for exercise, the proper exercises for shoulder?
Sure. There's things you can do. I would look up just rotator cuff exercises, and you would want to have like physical therapist rotator cuff exercises as opposed to bodybuilder type of exercises, because the physical therapist is going to start with really gradual, like band type of exercises that are generally very safe to do. My hesitation with something like that, to be honest with you, is to make sure the diagnosis is accurate. Because if you're dealing with a tendon injury, you don't want to just jump into a whole bunch of strengthening exercises and make the tendon worse. So having some guidance would be recommended. If it's a joint issue, I'd be actually a little bit less worried, because you can start some strengthening exercises and just allow the joint to tell you if it likes it or not, meaning if you don't feel worse afterwards, then it's okay, continue doing it.
Dee, thanks a lot for the call. Physical therapy with Matthew Goodemo today. Our number is 800-348-2551. One more call before our next break. We go to Jim in South Courtright. Jim.
Hi, how you doing today?
Good.
Great. Say, I've already learned an awful lot from Matt. I have a hip condition. This has been going on for a couple of months where it really started to hurt. And I went to my orthopedic doctor, and who sent me to physical therapy, and they gave me the wrong exercises. I live in Minneapolis, but we have a home out here in South Courtright. So now I'm separated from that doctor, and I'm trying to figure out what to do on my own. I have had an X-ray and an MRI on my hip, and it does show some arthritis, but it's not severe. So in listening to what Matt has to say, it's sounding to me like it's probably a spinal thing, like a lumbar stenosis or something like that. And I had a pretty long bout of sciatica that was really miserable. And I tried everything. I even went to a chiropractor, which I don't normally do. And I also went to a masseuse who actually did help quite a lot. And the sciatica seems to have cleared up, but now the hip is still drives me a little batty, mostly when I'm trying to sleep. I sleep for a couple of hours, then I wake up and I'm in pain, and I go and get an ice pack and try that. And I'm just wondering if there's anything that Matt can recommend to help me get through the night.
All right, Matt.
So the first thing is when people tell me their hip hurts, and they'll point off to the outer part of their bone, where the layman's term would be
right.
Hip. That's the back.
Right.
So the butt equals the back. The groin is actually where the hip joint is. So if it was your hip joint, you would typically be noticing groin pain or really deep buttock pain, but it wouldn't be on the outer part of the leg. That's typically the spine. So the also just what you said about sleep being a harder part, it can be with the hip, but it's more of a later stage. I found usually it's the, you know, walking type of things where you start to feel a pinch in the groin for the hip joint. So in regards to the back, one of the most common things I recommend at night is to try not to disrupt your sleep. So the first thing I would have you do is lie on the painful side, and then bring your knees towards your chest, and then bring your top shoulder backwards a little bit. So if it was the right, which hip is it? Is it the right or left?
It's my right hip.
So lie on the right side, bring your knees up towards your chest, and then the left shoulder goes backwards. And what that does is it reduces the pressure on the lumbar spine on that right side. So you would feel a stretch on the left side, but it's not for that purpose. We're actually trying to unload the lumbar spine joints. And anything that I ever recommend, and when I talk to patients in the clinic, it's always supposed to help. And so if you're doing some type of stretch or you're doing some type of position and you feel that your pain is getting worse, it's not helping, so stop doing it. And a lot of people have been taught, especially older people, to go push through pain and to ignore pain and things like that. And it's not the case, especially with the lumbar spine. You want to make sure that you are alleviating your symptoms, so find a position of relief. And sometimes it's literally just that simple. And then I would repeat that throughout the day, and I would do movements that helped your back feel better, your hip feel better during the day as well, leading up to the sleep and right before you go to bed.
Jim, we got to take a break here, but thank you for the call. Matthew Goodemote is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be back with a home stretch coming up. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you as we clear out all the snow in our region, or at least make the roads passable. What a storm we had. And if you have some aches and pains today, well, Matthew Goodemote is here. He's a physical therapist. A couple of emails here, Matt. This one is from Christine in Waterville. A friend sees a chiropractor twice a week for back issues, especially if she overdoes activity. She's retired, 68 years old, otherwise pretty healthy. Would she benefit from physical therapy? And that's from Chris. I think it's an unfair question to ask a physical therapist. But go ahead. Maybe you got an answer.
So it depends on what the chiropractor's doing. So just like everything, there's good chiropractors and there's not good chiropractors, and there's good physical therapists and there's not good physical therapists, and blah, blah, blah. So generally, when you're going twice a week to do things, I would be curious to know what exercises have been recommended at home. So the McKenzie method has some similarities as to what chiropractors would do. One of the big differences is that I would teach, if someone did an adjustment for the lumbar spine, I would teach the patient how to do a similar position to try to do it at home to keep the symptoms away, knowing that there's times where the adjustment is the exact right thing to do and it's the thing that helps the patient the most, but I'm always trying to get the patient to be more independent and do things without me needing to help. And it's a tricky space, though, because some people, it is what keeps them active, and I would rather have people be active than inactive. So in that regard, I would just be curious of what exercise they're doing at home.
All right, this one from Jan in Berkshire County. I've been diagnosed as having mild arthritis developing in my neck. I have had some accidents, so I'm not surprised. The problem is with sleeping. I routinely wake up with a headache. I've tried a variety of pillows, but nothing seems to help. Are there exercises that you might recommend?
Absolutely. So with headaches, especially if they're coming from the cervical spine, there's a couple key positions to get into. And oftentimes what's happening when we sleep is we're asleep, so we don't know that our neck's in a certain position. And so what I generally tell people is if you're sleeping, don't mess with it. Even if you're waking up in the morning with pain, I would try to fix the day, and typically the night will fix itself. So what I mean by that is, number one would be to address posture. And throughout the whole day, noticing how the head is being held and putting it in the best ideal position for the individual. And then doing a bunch of exercises, mobility, meaning range of motion exercises for the thoracic spine, which is just below the cervical or neck spine. And also doing some strengthening exercises for those back muscles, which tend to be the ones that need the most help. And then before bed, I would do things like making sure that my neck range of motion was full, making sure I had no tension in my muscles, and even perhaps using some heat to relax me and things like that to try to get a full night's sleep. And if the pain is waking up at night, I would do similar to what I did with the lumbar spine patient. I would seek out positions where my neck feels its best or where my headache feels the best.
and then try to fall asleep in that position, because usually it is positional, and that's the same I mean by posture, so how we hold our bodies. And if you find a position of relief, stay in it and just allow the relief to get maximum that you can get from that position. And again, in the middle of the night, sometimes it's enough, you can just fall right back asleep in.
All right, one more email, and then we will go back to the phones. If we can, we'll get a couple of more emails in before the end. This one is from James. I am 70 years old. Almost 20 years ago, I was diagnosed with a thinning bicep tendon and tears and fraying along the lines of the tendon. Can tendons rebuild? Also, can cartilage sometimes regenerate? And that's from James.
Very interesting questions. So tendons can absolutely rebuild in the sense that if what we know about tendons is they're incredibly resilient. And so what they need, though, is they need to be strained, which is what exercise does to them, to help maintain the strength in them and then to improve the strength. So that's what I would call rebuilding it. So we have lots of people who've come in. In fact, I recently had an injury myself, and one of the things you do is you start to do strengthening to help strengthen the tendon's resilience so that it can handle more forces. So I would absolutely say with the tendon. Now, as far as the size of the tendon, for a 70-year-old woman to have a large gain in the size of the tendon, no, I don't think that's a realistic goal. Is it possible? Yeah, I'm guessing it is possible, but I don't. 70-year-old women have a hard time putting on muscle mass, period. So to try to spend time to do a bicep tendon, I don't know that it would be worth time and effort, and it's not necessary. As far as cartilage regeneration, there's some new things happening in the medical world where people are using stem cell procedures to help to regenerate the cartilage. And yes, there are some signs that it does work. The problem is I don't know enough about this to talk real intelligently, but I have had a patient that had a stem cell procedure in the knee and had an MRI after the procedure, and there was signs of growth of cartilage. It's new, it's promising. I can't say more than that to say it's a definite yes or a definite no for people.
Okay.
But I do know there's movement in that direction that's very positive right now.
Physical therapy today with Matthew Goodemote. Our number is 800-348-2551. John is in Colony. John, you're up.
Okay. I'm 78 years old. In 2004, a neurosurgeon came into town, and I found out he did a lot of very expensive operations. And he took out the lower disc of my spine and then took bones from my head and butt and fused it in where he took out the disc.
Yep.
And it's left me like Quasimodo, the Hunchback of Notre Dame. And I'm going for physical therapy, and I'm going right now too. But I'm just wondering, is there a comprehensive back brace system where they could put a brace on my back? And I've also had a knee replacement, and I understand they don't like to give knee replacements like they used to now. And is it possible for me to get a knee brace and a hip brace?
Yeah, so the problem with braces are that we know this from lots of different areas of the body, but when you immobilize something or you prevent movement somehow by using a brace, then it will lead to an atrophy of the muscles. And then with the atrophy of the muscles coming out of the brace, it's actually more work for you to maintain a proper posture, for example. And also, because the braces will reduce how much movement you have in your joints, the joints will therefore get more stiff. And so the stiffer they are, the harder it is to move. The weaker the muscles, the harder it is to move. So there are occasions where somebody needs it because they're physically unable to do a physical activity without a brace or support. But if you're actually doing some things now, then I would do everything I could to talk you away from that and try to build on what you have. Now, if you were using a brace or support for a very specific purpose and a very limited amount of time, for example, with a knee brace, let's say you were going to be doing something standing, working at a woodshed, or you're going to be doing dishes or something like that, then by all means, have a brace, do the activity. When the activity's done, get it off and I would feel very similar about the spine, any type of bracing there. And then the last thing I'll say is that braces don't prevent every movement. So there's a lot of athletes, for example, in America that will put a brace on their knee after an ACL reconstruction, but they don't do it in Europe. And part of the reason is that the ACL in the knee is a rotational, and the brace won't stop you from rotating. So it doesn't really, it gives you a false sense of security, in other words. And the same thing is true in the spine. I worked with a spine surgeon before I moved back home, and he would use a brace back then because they did fusions and they used braces, and they found them not to be helpful. And so they don't do them anymore. Yeah. I can go on and on about the negative effects of braces.
Yeah, no, I think it makes sense what you're saying. The idea is I just got to keep on moving anyway without braces.
Yeah. And then when, like, again, I'm a big fan of frequency. So for you, when you talk about the Quasimodo spine, every time you go to the restroom, I would have you bending backwards. Every time you go into the kitchen, I would have you bending backwards. Every time you go out to the car, bend backwards. You get out of the car, bend backwards. Because that's your Quasimodo is a forward bending type of position. So I would want you to frequently, every hour, bend backwards, even if it's just literally two or three repetition, because that type of thing is going to have a much greater effect on than a brace would.
John, thanks so much for the call. Let's go over to Pittsfield. Rick, you're on.
Hey, how are you? Could you hear me?
Sure thing.
Yes.
Yep. So I got one issue, and I'd like to maybe hit, if I can, five high points with an opinion. So I have a ruptured disc between L1 and S1. As this thing has progressed, I had already been in physical therapy for some back and neck issues. And so as the pain started coming up, they had me doing – I also got a recommendation for physical therapy for back. And so they had me doing some various exercises to what they call getting the toothpaste back in the tube and getting the bulge back into the disc.
Yeah.
When it got to a point where I was screaming on the floor and I got an MRI –
yeah.
The surgeon, and I had talked to people that had used the surgeon right before that, who it was a miracle. You go in and you come out and you're breathing a new life. When I got to the surgeon, he said, no go. I've got so much rupture inside and outside that he can't get it in one shot, and he's going to have to put a brace on the around the disc. And in the long run, my body is not going to like that new restructuring. But they gave me, in the short term, the cortisone shot, which, again, they didn't know was going to work or not work. It gave me some reprieve.
Good.
And now I'm at the point where, here's my questions. So right now I'm managing the pain that's now with painkillers and high dosages of gabapentin. I had been using sometimes a chiropractor, but when they knew I had a ruptured disc, they really didn't want to touch me anymore. So those are two questions, opinion on gabapentin, and two on chiropractor for that kind of thing. Number three, when I talked to the surgeon about doing exercises and getting the toothpaste back in the tube, he almost took my head off and he told me there is no such thing, blah, blah, blah. But I asked him what my long-term potential was, and he said, well, if we can get the body to reabsorb the outside detritus, it'll be easier. So anything to do to get the reabsorption. And then I have two more questions, but I guess we'll stop there for now.
Okay. Fair enough. Show's almost over, so go ahead.
So as far as the gabapentin, that's really going to be more of a medical question. And it is been, you know, there's a lot of people with back pain that use it, and it is specifically for the nerves. So that's something that, like addiction rate and stuff like that, I don't think is very high, but it would, again, be something more for a physician to talk to about than me specifically. As far as the chiropractic, so this is the case for any medical practitioner. The people who are uncomfortable treating those things should not treat those things. And so I wouldn't try to encourage a chiropractor to do something that they don't feel comfortable doing. I've treated lots of ruptured discs. I have no fear whatsoever of treating them. But my approach to doing this is going to be based on how you respond to it. So the very first thing you talked about was the toothpaste and getting that back in. And we use that as an analogy for people. And the consistency of a disc is very similar to a toothpaste, but it's not quite that easy and that simplistic, and there's a whole multitude of other things happening in the spine, and you can't isolate one joint out to address it. So every time you're doing an exercise for the spine, you're doing it for the entire lumbar spine. So there is no way to work on the L1 alone. And that includes with any type of adjustment or manual techniques that anybody practitioner would do. So that's that part right there. So I don't want you to go away thinking you should tell a chiropractor what they should do. It's their comfort zone. And then if regarding the reabsorption, absolutely the body will reabsorb this. And your job is to help that process by avoiding things that provoke the back. And I want to clarify provoke, because a lot of times people will stop because they have pain during the movement, and I'm more concerned with pain after the movement. So if you take your finger and bend it backwards right now, that hurts. When you stop bending it backwards, it stops hurting. You know intuitively that's safe to do. And the same thing is true in the lumbar spine. So if you're in a position or you're doing an exercise and you feel discomfort, yes, stop. And if the pain goes away right away, then you know it's safe to try it again. I call that a yellow light. Increase but not worse. But if you increase your pain and then when you stop, the pain does not abate, it's time to stop, period. I don't care if it's two repetitions of an exercise that's supposed to help. It's not helping in that moment, so don't try to push through it. And it's very important with the spine to be active, because that's how you're going to get the reabsorption. And sometimes my record, so to speak, was a patient that could only walk for 2 minutes before his symptoms got worse. So I had him walk 2 minutes continuously 10 times a day. So he did 20 minutes total, but it was literally 2 minute bouts of it. And after a couple weeks, he went to 3 minutes. And by 6 months, he was walking 30 minutes continuously. But it was because he did to the pain, not through the pain. When his pain got worse, my recommendation was stop at that moment. Do not try to do even a little bit more. Let your body acclimatize to that. And then over time, gradually start to increase it.
Rick, thank you very much. Now, we only have about 30 seconds here. Jane in Verbank, if you can make it very quick, you can get your question in.
I have neuropathy in my fingers. I'm in my 90s. I have no pain. What can I do to help my muscles?
All right, Matt, you got about 20 seconds here.
Okay, there's not a lot you can do with neuropathies. Blood flow is the absolute key. So to doing things like washing dishes in warm water to keep the blood flow in the hand, wearing gloves and mittens to keep blood flow going there. But a neuropathy is very difficult to reverse, especially in the 90s, age 90s.
All right, Jane, I'm sorry we will have to leave it there, but thank you for calling. And Matthew Goodemote, thank you, sir. And I hope your snowblower-related injuries heal in time for the next storm.
Yes, thank you, Ray.
All right, buddy, we'll talk to you soon. Support comes from Rhinebeck Artist Shops, offering fine artist materials and custom picture framing in Rhinebeck at New Paltz, serving the Hudson Valley for over 45 years. HudsonValleyArtistShops.com. And the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, providing more than 40 miles of trails for nature therapy and exploration beyond the shore of Lake George. HikeLakeGeorge.org. Once again, thanks to physical therapist Matthew Goodemote for being here today on the line. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Apologies if we didn't get to your call. Matthew will be back again. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer, Dina Salzman. Wow, it's been a while. Thank you for doing the phones today. Tomorrow on the program, we discuss holiday cooking with a great guest who hasn't been on in quite some time, Jennifer Clare. That's tomorrow at 2. Right now, stand by for the Capital Connection.